I wanted to start first about to trace your involvement in the local itself, and you know what you did in the local and what.
How did I get became?
Well, when when Local 96 was formed, they put you on the on the executive board, right?
Yeah.
And had you been involved at all once it was formed, or that was the first you knew of it when you called?
Well, I was involved in this strike,
right.
And all that,
yeah.
But. Do you know that I didn't even know what executive board meant? And when they had the first meeting, see, they had to ask me if I accept, and I accepted.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what, I knew it was going to be some kind of meeting, but
yeah.
To me it was all Greek. So I was doing housework because I couldn't get a job
mm-hmm.
anywhere, and I had to eat. So anyway, they called me to a meeting, and I didn't show up. And that was the first meeting of Local 96. Executive board, and of course my name is the first one on the charter
mm-hmm.
because at that time my name was Anita Andrade. I was still married to this Mexican fellow, and then after then I stopped working where I was, and they sent me in a shop. That's when they start sending me to
mm-hmm.
different shops. And how I got involved with the union is, see, when I came here I didn't speak very good English. I couldn't get a job in the store because,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the language. And I could embroidery. I could sew because, see, I had gone to this sisters, you know,
mm-hmm.
The club in South America. So I knew how to work with my hands. So I went and got a job in a shop. That was even before the strike or anything. And then that's how I got involved when they had a general strike
mm-hmm.
in New York. And I told the girls used to go to
yeah.
meetings, remember, and they would say, sisters, let's go to a meeting. And I said, well, where are you going? They said, well, we have a new religion.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah. I was just concerned.
Let's see.
I wasn't sure what your role was on the general, on the executive board.
Oh, on the executive board,
mm-hmm.
I was just a member of the executive board, and for the first few months I just listened. Because
mm-hmm.
I finally realized what it was, of course, after I was there, but at the beginning I didn't know. And I was always sent, no matter what kind of committee, it was really funny because I was alone. My husband was, I think, in Mexico, was looking for gold someplace. So I was all by myself. And if there's a committee going, let's say the Central Jewish Committee is having a meeting or some kind of Jewish organization, so they wanted a partner. Usually two people
mm-hmm.
would go. And I'd go even if I didn't understand what they were talking about because it was mostly Jewish. But I went,
mm-hmm.
and if sometimes it was a Spanish meeting, they sent me with somebody else or some other kind
mm-hmm.
of organization. I would go in just as a figure, I guess, because that's all I did.
Well, did you stay on the executive board?
I stayed. I did. Then when I became an organizer, of course, they took me off the executive board. And.
But did you remain as an organizer? Were you active in the local itself, or mainly in the office?
I was in the office, in the shops, on the street, everywhere. Because I don't know, union went to my head so bad that I tried to organize everybody,
mm-hmm.
not only the garment workers, but even
the waitresses.
And I remember I went to my company and almost got thrown out there. The blue, they used to call them the blue collar workers, and anybody that wasn't union.
But what, as an organizer, what were you doing in the meetings at the local itself?
Well, like for instance, I would, either they give me a shop or I find a shop that I start to work on, and I get a committee to come to the union
mm-hmm.
and then talk to them and explain what the union is. And then when we got quite a few, we get quite a few shops together, then explain to them what the union is and how good it is
mm-hmm.
and the advantages. Which, you know, conditions were so bad in those years, it was just awful. So then, of course, some of them would give them cars to give up to other people, and lecture ladies in the shops, even before they became union,
mm-hmm.
and tell them what to do when election comes and their rights and all. And then, of course, after we organized the shop, sometimes we were lucky we signed up without the strike, but we did have to go to the labor board
mm-hmm.
and show we had a majority. And we always promised the people, which to this day I still think that this is the way it's done, but some of the people don't believe it, that you don't tell who signed the card.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the cards are not shown. But somehow there's always seems to be a Judas in every shop that they'll tell so and so signed, but they don't say that they signed themselves, you know.
Yeah.
So usually they start picking on the people that start organizing. And then, of course, once we signed up the shop, either it was assigned to me or to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was both.
Yeah,
that's when I became.
But what would you do at the meeting to the local itself?
The meeting.
You acted in the meeting to the local?
Usually I was, I had to speak, of course, at every meeting, and mostly was translating.
Oh.
And once in a while I had to conduct a meeting myself.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time I would be Spanish speaking, business agent or organized, mm-hmm. whatever it was. And so whatever the others said in English, I had to say it in Spanish.
Throughout the whole meeting? You can't say
well, not like they do, like, just to write down the most important thing. Sometimes I added something and sometimes I forgot something, I guess. But usually that's what I did. And then, of course, I had to see that everybody had seats or if we had coffee or, donuts mm-hmm. and things like that. Or everybody signed the cards or if we had a political meeting because they got into politics later and we bring the members with the M cards to sign, like sent to senators mm-hmm. or something, and we collect the cards. And
it was more coordinated and the meetings were run primarily by the people who were not in the union office, who were from the shop.
That would be the president of the shop or the local. If it was for all the shops, then it was the president of the local.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, my job wasn't except to translate, because they did their own business. And but when we had an organizing meeting, it was different. Then we did most of the talking,
see?
And I did most of the translating. So I know one thing that I was very well known, because not only did I speak, I had to speak to Spanish people, but the others looked at me after. Or I also spoke in English. Not as good, but I did it anyway. And
now, what about during the when you first got involved in the union, when the CIO was being formed, Bill Busick was very active in that. Or did you get involved in that at all?
I was, was Bill Busick still there? I think that Bill Busick was already gone when they started, you know, the rubber workers.
Mm-hmm.
I made the first leaflets.
Oh.
I was then, you know, I didn't type it because I don't know how to type, but I had to go through the mm-hmm. machine, and we had an old-fashioned machine, you know, and I had to make the leaflets, and we would go with the committees and to the shops, and that's when they had sit-down strikes, remember, years mm-hmm. and years ago. We helped in that an awful lot. And I was involved in that. And almost every union that had a strike there, I was calling on us. Yeah. And, of course, being the Spanish-speaking one, I had to be in every one of them.
So you would go and help pick it?
Yeah, I'd pick it, mm-hmm. then I'd talk to people and everything.
Mm-hmm. And would you be borrowed by these other unions or just to support them?
To support, because the only time I would say I was borrowed by somebody would be in a political campaign, like, you know, we're running... let's say I'm a Democrat, so we have a candidate, and I have to go to these polling stations mm-hmm. and check, and sometimes I'll be there for days.
Oh.
But still, I have to have some time to go into the union every day mm-hmm. for a little while.
Because
I did every all the time, even when I was working in San Bernardino as an organizer, I still was business agent in the shops here, and mm-hmm. I somehow managed both, which was a little bit too much, but I did it.
Mm-hmm. But when the CIO union was organizing, it was just a matter of blending them together, because the union was strong by then.
Yeah.
Now, but while I'm mentioning Bill Busick, I wanted to ask you how, in the Rose Pagoda book, I read about the big scandal after he'd gone, when they discovered that he had donated.
The thing is this. The way I heard, now I didn't see any of this, I didn't know anything about it. I know he was a wonderful speaker. I wish, you know, that I could have been one-tenth like he was. And he was a big, beautiful-looking man, not only. He was a nice person, very nice personality. But they say that some employer gave him some money. And I don't know how much it was even. And he took the money. But he took it and distributed it among the strikers. That's the way I heard the story. And of course, but they still used it against him.
Oh.
And he was fired. And to me, that was, the biggest shock of my life, you know, because I never expected it. And this is one thing we were taught from the beginning, and that's one thing that stayed with me, never to take anything. Now, whether everybody did the same thing as I did, I don't know. But I never took anything from the employers because I was scared to death that one day one employer would say, yeah, the dress I gave you or material or something. So I made it, when I became business agent, that's one of the things Levy told me. And he says, be sure that if you buy a dress in a factory, be sure to pay with a check. And that's how I opened the checking account, because I want to make sure that if anybody ever said anything, I always had a canceled check to prove that I bought a dress or a coat or whatever it was, you know. So, and another thing, we were told not to accept gifts from employers, which I never accepted gifts until I did accept later, but I'll tell you about it. So, they used to even send me gifts to my house, and I would send it back. Because I thought they were testing me, you know, I didn't know exactly, but, and I didn't know what the others were doing, but I know I didn't take them. And one time the poor lady of the shop, the employer gave me a beautiful blouse and I refused it. I said I didn't want it. The name of the shop was International. Then the poor lady came over to me and she says, Anita, why didn't you take the blouse? And I said, because I don't work here. I said, that's for the workers. So she says, well, suppose that the workers gave it to you in the shop. And then I would take it, I said, but not from the boss. And I did get the blouse. But that's, you know, that's in every shop. Wherever the workers were getting gifts from Christmas, I would get one exactly the same if I was at the party. But I went to a shop one time with Daniel Lynn, the manager. He was already the manager then. And they were giving out gifts. So they gave Daniel Lynn a box about this big. I don't remember what it was. Something made of copper, but I don't know what it was, a set of something. And he accepted it from the employer. And I looked and I thought, it's U.S. If the manager can, I said, why can't I? So when the boss brought me a gift, I saw the not as big as this one. So I accepted it too, you know. And then I told him later, I said, well, John, Mr. Levy had told me a long time ago not to accept gifts. And he says, no, we don't accept gifts, but that's Christmas and it's entirely different thing. He says, you don't accept big gifts and things like that. So I said, okay. And then from then on, whenever I went to a shop, if the boss gave me a gift, as long as it was like the workers, you know, like for instance, a shop called Arlene, they used to give little gifts to the workers. Every year I got, they even saved me a gift. Now there's an employer that used to give them perfumes. There's one shop called Vogue's of Hollywood, very nice employer. Now I wouldn't accept the shop, the president in the shop. And do you know he used to send it to me? It usually used to be a little bottle of perfume with the chair lady of the shop. See? So, one thing about it is, honestly, maybe I was too damn honest, I don't know, but I was told not to do it, and I wasn't going to. See, I think I would have died of shame if somebody had accused me I took something from an employer. Because in the first place, if you take something from somebody, how can you go and fight them like I have to go and fight for prices? Now, if I take my committee, well, I would be scared to death to say, well, you have no right to say anything, you know, because I gave you this. So I made sure that I never got anything for nothing. And this is, that's
the... But it was a very common practice for the employers to try and... Did that go way back?
I imagine from the very beginning. So I never got rich and I never got too many gifts. Except what the workers did, like, let's see, you know, there's a little pink dog up on top over there. Well, there was three dogs, a big and two little ones. Now, the workers of that shop, that was the Arlene shop, they all got the same thing. Another year, they got a basket and then full of towels, and I got the same thing. Or they get chocolate, you know, candy. And this, we all got a box of candy. Now, the impartial chairman office, not in Pasadena, the association representative used to send us a box of candy every year. But this we all accepted because see, he was being paid by the union and by the employers. So this one I knew that it was all right to accept.
Now, Anita, do you think that within the local itself, both 96 and 266, was was it a democratically run local, do you think? Did the people from the shop really have power within the local?
They did. Like I told you, I say that the communists helped us there because they had to do it, because the communists were, it seems that they were always on their toes. And if we did, and I never did anything wrong on delivery, maybe I did lots of things wrong that I don't know, but I know if we didn't do things right, immediately the communists would jump. And you're not doing this right, and it's not legal, and then so they watched it, you know. They mm-hmm. just tried to go by the book, you know, by the rules and all that. But the last few years, the communists got old, I guess, or I guess they got terrified, whatever it was. And the meetings used to run with all those last time things that they wanted to pass and they couldn't make it, you know, mm-hmm. because the members would object. But usually somebody has to know, because people are funny. If they don't know, they just follow, you know. But if somebody tells them, well, this isn't right, and this is one of the things that I used to do, and maybe that's one of the things also that I was not very well liked. Because, see, I never went with the, you know, exactly like I should. If I thought that something was wrong, I wouldn't tell the whole world, but I'd tell one person or two and pass the word on it's wrong, you know, that they shouldn't do that. So
you would work, in other words, what would happen is say that the officers would want something done, or the manager.
Or the New York office would say.
But then instead of openly challenging them, you would just...
If I thought it was something wrong, you know.
Uh-huh.
I had an awful time, one time I remember. I was, we were backing somebody for president. That was when John F. Kennedy, and I was crazy about John F. Kennedy, and the union wanted, I don't remember who they wanted before John was finally accepted, but they were going to vote for somebody else, and they wanted me to wear this button, and I refused to wear it, because I told them, I just can't wear it, and that's all there is to it. I'll tell the people that you told me to, that that's what you want, but I will not say I'm doing it. And they couldn't there's nothing they can do about it, you know. I don't remember who they were back in that time. Whether it was for governor or no, was it governor or president? I remember during the time of John F. Kennedy, when he got assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And John Ewing was kind of a funny person. Whether he didn't like John Kennedy or whether he wanted to show he's the boss, I don't know. But when John F. Kennedy died, I stayed home. And he gave orders that he didn't care who died, everybody comes to work tomorrow. And I said, well, he can just go by himself because I'm not going. And if you might get fired. I said, so let him fire me. He can do it anyway. He couldn't make me go to work for nothing. And I didn't go. Another time we had something else, but of course the manager had nothing to do with this. We had a strike in a building, 127 East 9th. And the president of the local, her name was Callie Williams. She was the chairlady of the shop also.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on the 10th floor. Well, you know, she insisted I come to the shop and settle some prices. And I told her, well, there's nobody's going to make me cross a picket line, and that's all there is to it. And so she come down to the restaurant, and she went to the union and complained because I wouldn't go to the shop. And I said, I'm sorry, but I will not cross even a communist picket line. I mean, I see a picket line, I just don't cross it.
Well, who, what was the picket line?
They were trying to organize the elevator workers. And you know, that's important because you have to take the elevator. I would walk the 10 floors, but that was a bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I just didn't go to the shop. So she went to the union and complained that I wouldn't come to the shop when she wants me. So I said, well, I won't go to the shop because they're on strike. And it wasn't my union, but they were trying to organize. And by the way, that building, I don't think I'd ever organized. You know, they went by buildings. I helped in that organizing. Then I helped in the laundry workers union when they started. I helped organize them 2 years ago. I don't even remember the people, but wherever they needed somebody, I was there.
Even though there was something, even though there was a picket line in front of the building, and it was the shop in the building was a union shop, they crossed the picket line?
Well, it depends. I mean, see, for instance, if it's a garment industry, if it's only one shop, mm-hmm. on strike. Of course, the others crossed the picket line, not the picket line, they went to their own shops. But if it was a general strike where everybody in the building is supposed to be out on strike, whether they came out or not, you're not supposed to cross the picket line.
But if it was another union, for instance, they did it, but they were supposed to.
Well, and the union didn't tell them to do it either. See, but they, some people just don't care. But see, you have to take the elevator, so that would be breaking the strike. Now, if it was something else, that was I was helping pick it or something, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't cross, and I remember one time they had a picket line in front of a show, and it was, they said, I didn't even know who was picketing, but they told me later it was the communists, and I refused to cross the picket line. I was in Arizona one time, and they were trying to organize a store, and I was there with my husband, my brother-in-law, and his wife, and they told me the coffee was on sale on that store. And we went, and we walked to the store, and there's the picket line trying to organize. And I stopped, you know, and I said, oh, no, I don't go in. So my brother-in-law said, you crazy? And I said, no, I said, you are. And so the pickets, of course, immediately wanted to know what's all about, you know, how they listen. And I said to my brother-in-law, my God, I said, you used to work for it, because I had been working in the union for a while as an organizer. I said, you used to work for the union, and now you want me to cross the picket line? I said, why, I wouldn't, even if they gave the coffee away. And that's when the leader of the pickets came over to me, and she said, God, I wish we had more people like you. But we didn't go in, that's one thing.
But it, you know, I was curious about the other people, and when there was a union shop, you know, in the international. But if some other union was organizing or picketing,
we used to, first we helped them picket.
Oh, and then
because I mean, if it didn't involve us, I mean, we couldn't stop working. You know, that would be illegal unless it was in the same. But we helped them. And we found if we got some information inside that they couldn't get, we'd get it for them. But unfortunately, I don't think we ever had 100% strike anywhere because there'd be always cabs, see? But those are the ones that work in the same shop.
Well, I mean, you brought something up. There are two things I wanted to ask about in terms of... One was one of the things that happened as unions were... reformed was, as in the agreements usually, were clauses that there could be no work stoppages. That if there was a complaint, you went to certain...
Well, yeah, but that's not.
Now, but did you ever, because most of the organizers I've talked to felt that work stoppages is one of the most effective things you can do, and
yeah,
they would ignore it.
Yeah, but see what, how they used to happen. Like, well, we could get something from officially from the union, you cannot... tell them, go ahead and stop working. But if the people of the shop decide to stop working on their own, I mean, who are we to stop them? You know, like out of the clear sky. Of course, you know very well that nothing comes out of the clear sky. But anyway, if out of the clear sky, they would call the union, for instance, Anita, we're coming down to the union because we can't get together with the boss. Well, Anita wasn't available. Either she was absent, even if I was in the office. You know, we weren't available. Mm-hmm. Let the boss stew a little bit. So then they'll come to the union and we'll talk to them and we'll tell them, well, now you go back to work because that's what the agreement called for. But there was lots of time because if you work at a certain time, but sometimes they get like a mule, they won't budge.
Mm-hmm.
And we have very good union people, much better than we have now. I don't know, I guess, the cost of living has gone up. The standard of living has changed. People are treated better in most places. So they don't care so much for the union. But years ago, the union was very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I say that if it hadn't been for the union, we'd still be like we were before. But
when something like the work stoppages would come up, were you ever in a position of being told by, were you...
I
under the table support of the workers stopping, but the union would push you into
then I have then I had to go. No, I didn't come to the union to see. They had the right to come to a meeting if they got very upset, and so then. But my job was to take them back to the shop, and after we talked to them and everything, we took them back to the shop.
But your tactics would be basically to stall, because it didn't look like you were supporting work stoppage.
That was personally.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've been finding it with most of the organizers. They would, because when the contract wouldn't allow for work stoppages, it meant losing a really important leverage that you had.
But see, when I first started working for the union, it was different. Then the law changed, and I can't remember the, what was it, the housing law or some law that came into effect. And we couldn't do this and we couldn't do that, because if we did it, the union would get fined or something. We couldn't, and so we had to be so careful, very careful in what we said and what we did. Because after all, I wasn't going to, excuse me, I can't, sit in here. Come here. Sit in there.
She's good to watch
her. Yeah, I know, but it makes me nervous. So, but years ago it was much easier.
Mm-hmm.
See, but later on, like they say, well, you can do that. Now, for instance, as an organizer of business agent, we weren't supposed to get into fights or anything, because the union would be sued. We couldn't use bad language. Of course, sometimes we forgot ourselves, you know, and I was the one that usually got in more trouble than anybody else.
Now, what would happen, you told me last, the other thing I wanted to find out was when there was a disagreement between you as the business agent or organizer and the officials of the union, like you told me about a couple of incidences where you felt that that part of the shop could be signed, like
oh,
the letters,
yeah,
the vice, or that you can get a partial agreement, but the vice president was opposed to it. Now, what would happen in a situation like that? Would you actually have an argument with him?
No, because see, we were kind of the little fishes, you know. Most of the time, this I cannot prove, but I imagine so. Either the vice president has already been told in New York to sign an agreement the way it's supposed to be, which was really good, you know. But sometimes we found at the beginning of the union in Los Angeles that it was better if you could step in, you know, put your foot in, and then later on walk in.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't want to listen. I mean, the first years, that's how we organized. If we couldn't get the whole shop, we got half of the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, it had to be all or nothing. See, and this, we felt that most of the business agents, I imagine, organizers felt the same way, that we should, we didn't argue about it, you know, but we, like there is one shop, for instance, I told you, the Chick Lingerie, we could have signed up that shop, but there were certain things that the union from New York wanted done, and we couldn't get it, and at the end we lost the whole thing.
And how would the business agents and the organizers, would you try and fight with the manager here about
no,
it?
No, we didn't, because he himself was already told by the vice president, excuse me, what to do. And, of course, what they wanted, it wasn't a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really wanted, like, if we want 35-hour week, it has to be 35 hours. Everybody should be in the union. The minimum should be raised for everybody and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And so what... If we thought it, it would be kind of crazy, because they wanted a good thing. But sometimes when I figured that if you can't get the whole bread, we'll get to half of it, you know. And we lost quite a few shops that way, because we, like there was a, I don't remember the name of the shop, I think I told you in, I think it was close Santa Monica, very exclusive dresses, and they had coats. Now the coats were all organized. But Otto, was the vice president at the time, he absolutely said, no, they all have to join the union, dresses and cloaks. So what happened? We lost the dressmakers and we lost the cloakmakers in that shop.
Now, would the business agents among themselves then be resentful about it?
Well, I guess we didn't like it, but we couldn't do anything about it. I used to feel very bad for the people.
Well, did you feel... powerless, that in effect decisions would come down to New York that you had nothing to do with and you were just supposed to act on them. How did that make you feel?
Well, do you know something? This is something I've done that I don't know what the others did. I have done something, for instance, in this particular case, where I myself on the side would tell the people, well, I wouldn't accept it, you know, if I were you, but I can't do anything about it. I did.
Mm-hmm.
And others must have done the same thing, because... I know that the people, they used to come around and, gee, for months after this time, well, I was living in 29 pounds when they used to call me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt terrible because they didn't get shop, and I don't think anybody felt worse than I did.
Well, and on the whole, Anita, did you feel that the people here did not have much control over decisions, that they came from New York? Did you feel that the power locally, there was no power?
I still feel that everything comes from New York.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems that everything is done according to what the General Executive Board says or orders them to do. So I know for certain things, like for instance, there were some incompetent people working for the union, and they must have some friends someplace, and there happens to be one left of the whole bunch that was supposed to have been thrown out. If I had been the manager of the union, that would have been the first one to go. And you know who it is. I already told you his name. But it seems that New York had more power, and somehow he was kept on.
Hmm.
And the funniest thing is that this particular man, he is very smart. I mean, he's really smart, but I don't know whether he's selfish or whether he wasn't used it the right way. He started to be a lawyer, but he never graduated. But he speaks like one, you know. And
well, do you think that may be part of the basis for the resentment, say, of Levy, that he represented the authority of New York? Do you think that was
part of it? I think so. You know, not only for Levy, because I noticed one thing, that no matter who was the vice president, now, with Feinberg, of course, he didn't stay here long enough, so I don't know how they felt, but Levy, they had a resentment against him. Then later on, Otto became the vice president. They didn't like him either. Of course, I didn't like him myself personally because he was funny, but not for other reasons. Sims came and he was the vice president for a while, and also they resented him because he did what he stole from New York, I imagine, because they have executive board meetings all the time, you know. Now we have a new vice president now. Now, I thought he was swell. I still think he's swell. But you should hear what the others say about him. So I don't know what it is. It must be orders that they get, because I know when he came here to Los Angeles, he came with the best intentions in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to clean house. He was going to get rid of this one that's no good and that one. And he's going to do this and that and the other. And finally, of course, I got sick in the meantime. So from what I hear now, he hasn't been able to do any of those things because the people are out, not because, well, he got rid of a couple of them, I think, but most of them are out because they came of age and they had to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had to, when they're 65, they had to leave.
That
policy is made in New York.
In New York, and that people did not have that much control over the situation.
They don't have it yet. And
what I want to get clear on the relationship, taking Levy, for instance, as an example. There was always a vice president here.
Yeah.
And then what was his relationship to the manager of each local?
Well, now let's see. When he was working with 266, that's where his office was, he got along fine with Cliff Mayer, that was the manager at the time. But before Cliff came, we had this Egerton. Now, where he came from, God only knows, because he wasn't even from the garment industry.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have good relationships with Egerton, but Egerton was no good because he did lots of things that he wasn't supposed to do. And the day he didn't last.
As the vice president, he in effect was over the managers of each local.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of all the locals.
And
yes.
What was the relationship between the locals?
At the beginning, when we first started, it was very nice and friendly. And that's something else that I always thought it was crazy, when the locals divided. You know, one would be in one place, another somewhere else. There was three joint boards. The sports where they used to call it the joint council. The dressmakers, they call them the dressmaker joint board. And the clockmakers, they call the clockmakers joint board. And it seems that everyone was fighting each other. And me as an organizer, I didn't care if it was a clockmaker I organized, but they wanted me to
only
organize my sport. They didn't come out. Well, they almost came out and said it, you know, that's not your job, you know. And to me, it didn't make any difference.
Well, were there any meetings where all of the different...
Well, they had, the managers, I guess, but we didn't go to those meetings. The managers would meet, and I know that one manager didn't like the other. They didn't like each other, and it wasn't, I think it was mostly job jealousy. And the dressmakers were forced later to join the old local to come because either the local got too small or something, or maybe orders came from New York. They sent them to our union. Oh, and how they resented. It was terrible. They didn't want to cooperate at first. And even the garment workers, the people, because they had already been told, they'd been forced to... Then when... I wish I could find a letter that I wrote to Stolberg, but I can't. They came to a general executive board meeting here. That was before I got sick. And I always have been in favor that all the unions be together. And I told him so, and I also wrote to him. And he came and he said that we're all going to be together, the clocks and the dresses. And I told him that I was very happy to know that finally this is coming up. And not only did I tell him so, but I wrote to him. But I wrote to him other things too, because, like for instance, I was getting less money than others and all that. So I put that in too, you know, and I told him I was very happy to hear that finally we're going to get together where we'll be one union.
Now, before that, though, all that would happen is, say, the vice president would meet with the managers of each of the other unions.
Yeah.
So it was just a way for him to communicate from New York. What?
I guess so.
I see.
And now, for instance, Otto was not like, the clockmaker union was more powerful and more experienced than now, at least the manager and the people, the executive board members, they knew more about union, I guess, than we did, or they were not kept in the dark. But they fought harder than we did, so they didn't want Otto to be in their office, so he had to come over, and his office was in Otto. Of course, the reason was because he had to pay rent, you know, wherever his office was. So it helped us, supposedly, you know, pay the expenses. So, well, they have different ways.
Well, I mean, see, within the union itself, there were the people who were officially, you know, in power, and who would translate the decisions made in New York. Were there other people who were not in official positions who seemed to play more important roles in the union?
Well, it's like, for instance, there were committees like... in the joint board, they have the board of directors. The board of directors is pretty powerful too, you know, and they had quite a bit to do. But the plain membership didn't even know what was going on.
Mm.
So, and of course, the letters would. But for instance, if we got the raise, we didn't get the raise because they decided, at least in my local, they didn't. When the order came from New York that we had to get the raise, we all got it. They always managed to kind of skimp on me because they said that, imagine me, I was more of an organizer than a business agent. Still, Mr. Otto, the vice president, who wrote to New York and said that I was not paid the same as the other three men because I was only a business agent.
Oh, that's right. You couldn't need the
money. Yeah, and I didn't need the money. And I used my car more than anybody else did. So when, and of course, John Eulene almost openly told me if I didn't like it, you know what I could do about it. So I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. If you think I'm going to quit, I'm not going to. Because if you throw me out through the door, I'll come back through the window.
Well, what was the relationship between the business agents? I mean, here was a situation where you were getting less pay. Did this affect your relationship to the business?
No, it didn't because it wasn't their fault. I figured they have a... well, first, they were all men. See, the women, it seems to me that maybe had more to do because we were women. The men and the women were supposed to get a certain minimum wage. But we didn't get any expense money. And, of course, the way they put it down is, well, like Mel Steen and Jack Spindler and Max Wolf, they were getting more money because they're business agents and organizers. And I was the same thing, but I never got the same thing. And then they had other ways of getting paid, like Max Wolf would get paid for going to San Bernardino because he took care of the, of that place, and he got $10 extra, which that, you know, $10 here and $10 there, it kind of helps. And then he get $10 for going to the impartial chairman's office all the time, or to the go to the unemployment. He was always refereeing, and he was pretty good to help the workers, you know, in the when he came cases where they couldn't get their unemployment or something. So he got extra for that. When Wally came, that's, we call him Wally, his name is Cornelius Wall. When he came, the first thing he did, he cut off that extra money that they were getting. So you should have seen some of the business, and it was really funny, because they were so mad, and I was laughing. So they asked me why, and I said, well, I said, see how it feels? I said, how do you think I feel all these years when I didn't get it? Don't worry about it, because I didn't have it, so I didn't lose it. But you lost it, see? So then later on, like I told you, Wal did give me the raise, and he didn't have to ask New York either. Mm. See? So they can if they want to. That's an excuse.
Now, what was your relationship to the, were you closer to the other women who were the business agents, or to the men, or didn't?
Well, see, in my, when I was with the sportswear, there was only one other woman business agent, which was May Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I liked her, but she's, well, I don't know how to explain her. She, after a few months of working in the, her office is here and mine is here, and we have a division in here, and I could hear her talking to the people. And I'm a funny person, so, and then she started talking to newcomers, you know, that didn't know her, and then she started explaining how she became a business agent, and she, why she went to work in the shop, because her intention was to work in the union, but she had to go into the shop. And she used to pretend like she was a big shot, you know, but actually she was nothing but a worker like I was. And she was always putting airs, and I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, but otherwise, I mean, I